Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable, hosted by Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Dorothy is a nationally recognized benefits and compliance consultant and group health broker. Here, you'll listen to industry experts break down the latest news and trends in employee benefits, healthcare reform, regulations and compliance, all designed to empower executive decisions.
Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable. I'm your host, Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting, and I want to welcome my guest today, Marilyn Monahan of Monahan Law Office, and share with you some audio excerpts from our recent Advanced Benefit Consulting Artificial Intelligence Lunch and Learn on January 25th. Welcome, Marilyn.
So nice to be with you again, Dorothy.
For the listeners, we're sharing two of our sessions, or at least excerpts from those, on this podcast. Marilyn, we're going to share information from your Legal Considerations of AI session. What did you think of that session?
I think this is a fascinating topic, and I really enjoyed putting it together, especially as part of the package of programs offered that day. The other sessions helped to inform the choices I made when focusing on some of the key legal issues I decided to include.
Yeah, and was this your first detailed session on the legal side of artificial intelligence?
You and I did a preliminary one a number of months ago, but this was probably one of my earliest detailed sessions on this very new and evolving topic.
Yeah, and the one you're talking about was our Lunch and Learn in September, where we had kind of an introduction to AI, if you'll recall. That was just a one-hour session panel with the both of us, and that was obviously very well received by our clients and our guests that were in the room that day, and that's what incentivized me to do that full Lunch and Learn, 3.5 hours of jam-packed information on this topic, because as you said, artificial intelligence is, you know, that's the way of not only now, but the future, and I think if we didn't cover it, we'd be doing everyone a disservice. So thank you very much for doing that.
It was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed the panel discussion as well, and working with you and Eric and Adriana on all of that.
Yeah, the panel was a lot of fun. I really liked that too, because we got to bounce ideas off of each other and really kind of hear the other person's perspective of where they're coming from. And I think that made a really nice, well-rounded discussion on artificial intelligence, I think.
This is such an evolving and interactive area. I think the panel discussion was just an excellent way for us to be able to bring the different disciplines involved in this process into one cohesive discussion so that we could talk about the legal issues, the practical issues, the HR issues, the insurance coverage issues, the cybersecurity issues, et cetera, and bring them all to our clients in one session.
Yeah, it was a really great, great day, I think. Well, let's get into it now. We have a lot to share from our session. We're going to start with, of course, our session one that day, which is our legal considerations of AI. So I'm going to go ahead and share that with our listeners now.
I just want to highlight a few things as people start listening in. This is an evolving area. The technology, how it is being used, and the law are all constantly changing. I want to encourage listeners to take a team approach to their understanding and implementation of AI and reach out to experts, including legal counsel, as needed as part of this process.
Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and get started. I hope you do enjoy this session. We're going to go ahead and get started. I think most of you know me. I'm Dorothy Koshu. I'm the president of Advanced Benefit Consulting, and I want to welcome my guest panelists today, Marilyn Monahan, on my immediate left. I guess you're right. our attorney from Monahan Law Office. We have Adriana Mendieta, and we have Eric Berglow there. So I'm going to go ahead and, again, welcome Marilyn Monahan. She is our first presenter today, and she's going to be talking about the legal risks and needed protections. Go ahead, Marilyn.
So what we're going to talk about here today are some of the legal issues in connection with artificial intelligence. Well, as we all know, AI is revolutionizing the workplace as well as our personal lives, but AI also raises a lot of legal issues, both for employers and employees and for your clients. So we want to start talking about here today what kind of issues employers and companies should start thinking about in connection with AI use. And we're going to start the discussion with what are some of the legal issues that surround the use of AI technology in the workplace. So I'm going to start actually by defining some terms, but the reason I put the header may be subject to change is because it can be difficult even coming up with a definition of what is artificial intelligence. And in fact, in looking at some of the bills that are starting to make their way through the California legislature, as well as at the federal level, as well as the various executive orders that have been issued by the White House and by the state government, one of the first things they want to do is define what is artificial intelligence, because once you have to define it in order to figure out what the parameters are of what you're trying to regulate through the laws that might be passed. So one definition that I found in a resource that was available to me is AI refers to computer software systems that, when combined with extensive sets of data, are able to perform tasks that would normally require human intelligence, such as speech and image recognition, language translation problem solving, and decision making. And there's a separate subset of that called generative AI systems, and AI systems that are independently create new and unique content from user prompts based on massive data sets. And we're going to be talking about generative AI in particular a lot here today. So unlike conventional software, generative AI does not simply recognize or classify existing data, but rather creates novel output from a given user input. A generative AI system can provide a sophisticated answer to user questions by synthesizing the vast quantities of data used to train the algorithm. So the AI systems gather a lot of data, you then ask it a question, and it produces output for you. So that's basically what generative AI is. Now we did also, Eric, I think, prepared a list of defined terms, and I think that's in your handout. We've got that as well. The last item I wanted to talk about was another defined term, and I'm mentioning this one in particular because it is one of the definitions they use in a pending California bill that the legislature will be looking at this year, and that's automated decision tools or automated employment decision tools, and it means a system or service that uses artificial intelligence and has been specifically developed and marketed or specifically modified to make or be a controlling factor in making consequential decisions. So it's a decision-making tool that some employers might use. And then I also added on this slide algorithmic discrimination. And again, I took this from that state bill that is pending, AB 331. And this talks about the kinds of things, when we get to the bias discussion, that they will be looking at AI programs to try to determine whether or not they are inappropriately biased, so that they may be discriminatory on the basis of, for example, race, color, ethnicity, sex, religion, age, etc. So those are the defined terms we're going to start with as we start talking about what some of the legal issues are. And the first one I wanted to mention might come as a surprise to you, and that is who owns the AI output. So you put your prompt into the generative AI program, it produces some output, it produces a description or a summary or an analysis. Who owns that? And apparently, legally, it hasn't been decided yet. It's an open question as to who might actually own that output. And then what I've got here on the slide are some of the different individuals or entities who might be deemed to own AI. This is what the powers that be are looking at. These are the categories that they're considering. The owner of the data actually used to train the AI system, the creator of the AI algorithm, like ChatGPT, the owner of the computer that ran the algorithm, like you or me, the person who drafted the prompt that generated the content, the person who commissioned the content, or is it all just in the public domain and no one owns it? This is the kind of issue that will be decided in the future, but it's something to think about if you are using a ChatGPT system or something along those lines and it's producing work product for you. There may be a question as to what your ownership level is for that, and so what kind of data do you want those systems to produce? If it's something critical, something you would normally consider like a trade secret or proprietary, maybe you don't want it created through one of these systems until they work out the parameters of who owns what when. Copyrights and patents are also an interesting issue that is coming up a lot, and it comes up in a couple of different contexts. So, for example, one of the first has to do with, as I alluded to earlier, what happens is when they train these generative AI programs, what they do is they scrape a lot of data from a lot of different resources. They gather information from all sorts of different resources, and that's their database, so that when you then ask a question, the algorithms spit out an answer based on the data that's already in the system. But that has raised questions as to are the ChatGPT, is Microsoft, whoever's running these programs, have they violated the copyrights of the original drafters of this information? Because when they scrape up the system and then information and then utilize it to create new content, are they in fact violating the copyrights of the individuals that created the original content? And this has led to a lot of litigation, led to some significant litigation. The New York Times has sued OpenAI and Microsoft for copyright infringement, saying that they copied millions of articles to train ChatGPT. OpenAI responds, well, that's acceptable under the fair use doctrine of the copyright laws. The New York Times says, no, it's not. What you're doing is you're using our content without paying us. There's another lawsuit that's pending where the Authors Guild and a whole series of very prominent authors, such as George R.R. Martin, John Grisham, and a number of others, have sued, again, OpenAI, saying that you're violating our copyrights. So and that's a class action. So these lawsuits will be working their way through the system. I'd also saw an article that indicated that OpenAI is actually in talks with CNN and Fox to allow the use of their materials. So that's the other side of the coin. Maybe some of these underlying producers of content are going to be willing to work with these systems in order to allow their materials to be used. So that's one question, and employers need to be concerned about that, because if you use one of these systems and they repeat someone else's work and it's not attributed to them and it violates the copyright laws, could they then come after you? The next issue is kind of relates to the ownership issue I talked about, and that is you use one of these systems and it creates material for you, and you want to get a copyright for it. Right now, the U.S. Copyright Office takes the position that they will only grant copyrights to materials produced by humans. And an algorithm is not a human, and so at this point, there are restrictions on their ability to issue a copyright to some of the materials that are created through these generative AI processes and systems. Now, this is how as we're sitting here today, this is an ever-evolving situation. They could easily change the copy. I shouldn't say easily. Nothing gets done easily legislatively, but they could change the rules. They might find workarounds depending on how the documents are drafted and what kind of resources they use. So this is going to be an issue that is in flux. But interestingly, right now, the general rule is you can't get a copyright on something that's not actually produced by a human being. That would raise questions as if you started the process using generative AI and then turned it into something on your own, I don't know what they would do with that. Similarly, patents will only be issued to a human being. And if a generative AI program created something that would otherwise be patentable, the patent office won't necessarily issue a patent because it wasn't created by a person. It was created by a computer. And by the way, with my legal discussion, I'm realizing I'm kind of giving you the scary aspects of the thing, of this whole process. That doesn't mean there aren't very good reasons to use AI. You just need to be aware of what the issues are surrounding. And I think later on we'll give you some more information that will indicate certain solutions to the appropriate use of generative AI and how you can make it work for you. One other item that I wanted to, well, there's several other legal items that I wanted to mention, and one is the right to publicity. And under the California Civil Code, there is a statute that prohibits, this is pre-existing, pre-AI, that prohibits someone from using someone else's name, voice, signature, photograph, or likeness without their permission. And using someone's name, image, likeness, voice, etc., without their permission can give rise to litigation. And there has been a couple of suits about, at least one that I know of, regarding the right to publicity. So this, again, would come up if your process generated something that utilized someone's name, voice, photograph, or likeness. And this usually comes up with actors, musicians, athletes, celebrities, and other public figures, but it could come up in other circumstances. This is probably the next item I wanted to mention. I think is probably one of the more interesting discussions, and I think will come up multiple times throughout the session today, and that's the ethics of the use of AI. And this is something that you can design processes, rules, procedures, and so forth to work around. But I think it's something that you need to, from the get-go, think about and how it might affect you depending on how you intend to use AI. So I came up with some examples of the type of situations that give rise to potential ethical issues. For example, a student uses AI to write a term paper, an admissions essay, or to respond to exam questions. What are the potential issues with regard to that? Or taking it to the workplace, you hire an applicant based in part on a writing sample, but it turns out that writing sample was generated by generative AI. You're really getting a good impression of what their skill level is if they didn't write it cold, if they didn't write every word of it. Similarly, an employee is hired as a copywriter, but the employee uses an AI system to create content without disclosure to employer or the client. So this is once you hire them. You think that they're writing the materials, but in fact they're using an algorithm to help them with that process. An employee discloses private employer or client data to an AI system without disclosure, either to the employer or to the client, so that they're plugging confidential, proprietary, personal health information, employment data, whatever it may be, into the AI system. Maybe they haven't told their employer they're doing it, or their employer is okay with them doing it, but they haven't told the client, or they haven't taken the appropriate steps to make sure that data is protected. Or another circumstance related, and client expects original content, but the employer uses AI without disclosure. So let's say someone hired me to write an administrative services agreement, expecting that I, as the lawyer, are going to write it. I agree to pay, they agree to pay me $1,000 for that, and yet I don't do any of the writing. I produce it through some sort of AI process and just hand it to them without reviewing it. That obviously would not be at the level of practice that they're expecting from me. I would not be meeting my ethical responsibilities.
Well, boy, it would be easier, wouldn't it?
It'd be a lot easier. I could do it from the beach. I could do it from anywhere. But it's not what the client expects and would raise a number of ethical issues. I came up with some examples of this that we've seen. There's been a couple of stories in the news about lawyers who produced legal memoranda that were filed in court using generative AI, and it turns out that the system made up court cases, made up citations, these cases didn't even exist.
They call that hallucinating.
Yes. Hallucinating, yes, yeah. I think that's. And now that, I would say, is a problem. That is something I never would have done even before AI. They always teach you in law school, check the original sources, don't rely on a treatise, go back to the case law. Obviously, I would argue these lawyers didn't do their jobs in either an AI environment or a non-AI environment, but it is something that you all employers need to be wary of. Let's say you do decide to use a generative AI program and it produces a great sounding description of the Affordable Care Act or ERISA, and it sounds good. Some of these programs sound really good, but when you go and look and you start delving into it or digging in, they've misstated the situation. They've misstated the facts. They don't have a good description. Another example was Microsoft, apparently, this is the allegation, used generative AI to create an obituary for a young basketball player who'd passed away. And the headline that the system produced was Brandon Hunter, useless at 42. He died at 42. The article was full of, which is very insulting to his friends, yeah, his family, yeah, everyone.
Yeah.
It was filled with typos. It was garbled. It claimed that he had performed in 67 video games as opposed to basketball games. So these are the kinds of things. Obviously, you don't just take the materials that are generated. You need to fact check them. You need to peer review them. You need to check original sources. So the safeguards that I suggested here are some that I came up with that I actually derived from the American Bar Association resolution that they generated. And one of the things that employers can think about is if their employees are using this system, that's fine, but you want human authority to use it to begin with. You want a supervisor to approve it. You want oversight and control. You need to accept accountability for the output. Ultimately, it's not the system that generated it. Well, the system did generate it, but you are responsible for using it. You want transparency. If you're using these systems, you want to make certain that the clients are comfortable with it, that they know about it, and they are accepting of it. You want to take responsibility for any decision-making that is made by the tools that are utilized. This comes up in the employment context. And document key decisions with regard to the design of the programs, risk, procedures, and outcome. Okay. So, I talked about this a little bit already. AI systems may have scraped private and confidential data. You know, I talk about that the fact that it might violate copyright laws when they scrape the data that they're using, but they might have also picked up confidential data from books, social media, articles, websites, blog posts, etc. So when you repeat whatever data it's spitting out for you, and it's based on confidential data that maybe they shouldn't have access to or shouldn't be reusing, you need to be cognizant of that. But I think the other issue, which will probably generate more attention by this audience, is keep in mind if you're using these systems and you're downloading employment data, you're downloading health information if you're using benefits type software, or you're downloading trade secrets or proprietary data, what kind of protections are built in? If you are downloading, let's say, I'll take protected health information that's protected by HIPAA or California privacy laws, and you put that into the system, either your employee does it without your knowledge or you are fully aware of it, what protections is the AI system offering you to make sure that that data isn't utilized or disclosed or breached in a way that it shouldn't be? So, for example, do you have a HIPAA business associate agreement? If they save the information on the cloud, are you comfortable that that is being done consistent with HIPAA or California privacy laws? If there is a breach, will they provide you with the data you need to send out breach notices? If they're saving the information on servers that are located in another country, there's going to be different privacy laws or no privacy laws that apply to that data. So those are some of the things you need to think about. Bias, also a very significant issue that employers need to think about. There has been a lot of talk. I alluded to this at the very beginning when I mentioned AB 331, the bill that is pending in the California legislature. There is a very big concern that AI systems might have inherent biases built into them, and so that employers that use it, for example, to make employment decisions or decide who they're going to hire or not, might be using systems that have inherent biases built into them. Now, there's a kind of extreme example. The EEOC entered into a settlement over AI use and bias. It was actually touted as the first settlement that was entered into. And in that case, the employer, iTutor Group, had set up its system so that it would reject resumes and applications from men over 60 or women over 55. Now, that was, some commentators have said, is that really an AI problem? That's just a problem, setting up, don't do that. That's a very bad thing to do. So, but those are some of the issues that they're worried about, because based on biases that creep into the process when they're setting up the algorithms, or biases that creep into the process when the employer is giving the prompts or setting up the system for use in their own company. Keep in mind that Title VII, which prohibits discrimination in the workplace on the basis of race, color, religion, etc., is in full force and will apply to any decisions that you make about who to hire, who to interview, etc., whether you use an AI system or not. The U.S. government, or specifically the EEOC, has started to issue some guidance on this issue. They have what they call the Artificial Intelligence and Algorithmic Fairness Initiative, and that is supplemented by some basically FAQs. That's the next item that I've quoted there, the select issues. So what they've done is they've posted some FAQs to try to describe some of the tools that an employer might use in order to ensure that their systems that they're using for hiring and making employment decisions are not biased. Interestingly, if you'll note, I've got the date there. They use guidelines dating back to 1978 and want to apply it to this new AI technology. And they give some pointers there on some of the guidelines that employers should take to, in order to ensure that their AI systems are not biased, such as determining whether or not the AI vendor they are buying the product from has taken steps to evaluate whether the use of the tool should be expected to result in substantially lower selection rate for individuals in a protected class. If the vendor promises that it's been tested for that, even if they're wrong, the employer may still be liable. But I think a first step in due diligence is asking the vendor what kind of testing they've done on their system. When they talk about selection rate, they are talking about the proportion of applicants who are hired, promoted, or selected, and calculated based on the total number of applicants in the group. And EEOC has what they call a four-fifths rule. That's a general guide to determining if the selection rate for one group is substantially different than the selection rate for another. So that's the kind of numbers that you'll be looking at when you're trying to determine, is this system, does it have bias built in? Is it coming out with biased results? And actually, I was looking at the EEOC rules and looking at the potential bias issues, and I found an article that Fisher Phillips offers that provided in a very succinct fashion 10 pointers to ensure fair AI use and avoid discrimination claims. Rather than rewriting the book, I thought I'd give you the quote, the link there to the Fisher Phillips article, because I think they did a very nice job in outlining some of the things you need to start thinking about as you start working through this process if you're thinking about using AI technology for employment-related purposes. And finally, a few more legal standards and guidelines that I wanted to talk about. So the White House, the Governor Newsom, et cetera, this is a hot topic. There's a lot of developments in this area. The White House has issued a blueprint for an AI Bill of Rights. Governor Newsom has issued an executive order, and Dorothy and I sat through a coffee chat that Pyra was offering last week where the project manager for Governor Newsom's executive order was talking. The executive order that Governor Newsom's team is working on, and they're already starting to post deliverables about, is focused on AI use by state agencies. So it's the state workforce, it's how the state agencies might use this data. But they are hoping that some of the deliverables can be reviewed by private employers and maybe utilize some of the same concepts and some of the same concerns. Also, in this process, they're talking to a lot of stakeholders, so they're getting the discussions going because what works at the state agency level presumably would also apply at the private employer level. I also mention here there's Federal Trade Commission regulations, and I think Adriana's going to talk about SEC rules on this. There's a lot of stuff floating around out there. But before, as I wrap up here, one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about was where we are legislatively.
Dorothy? By the way, we have a question from the chat. Who is the Bill of Rights being created to protect?
So that's a great question. I'll take a stab at it.
Please do.
Yeah, because that's a loaded question, I'm going to call it. right?
Good.
You know, anytime that legislators are creating something, you know, it's going to be to protect its citizens, its residents, you know, its people. But when they create Bill of Rights, it's really going to be, when the Bill of Rights have been created, it's going to be to protect, you know, the dollar, to say it better, you know, that consumer or that person that is spending or losing, you know, they're going to try to minimize those types of incidents with this type of legislation. It's not like, you know, our Declaration of Independence or anything like that. It's going to be more, you know, geared towards, you know, AI and the troubles that it could cause in protecting the people that it could hurt. That's my best take at it.
I would agree with that. At the federal level, we understand that Senator Schumer and Senator Cantwell are working on some bipartisan legislation on regulating AI. Again, first thing they need to do is figure out what AI is and where it applies. But they do have some bipartisan discussions that are going on. At the state level, again, looking at a definition of AI, what kinds of state committees are looking at this? In the Assembly has a whole committee devoted just to privacy, the Privacy Committee. So they will be considering any bills related to AI as well as other privacy concerns. The Senate, any privacy bills, including AI bills, will be run through the Judiciary Committee. Where we stand now here in California is we are in the second year of a 2-year legislative term. What that means is bills that were not signed into law last year can still be picked up by the legislature this year and looked at and passed. I think they have to pass their house of origin by, I think it's January 31. So any bills carried over like this AB 331 that I keep referring to, that was a bill that was introduced last year, it's carried over. What we also know is there's a whole slew of new bills that are being introduced. They have until February 16 to introduce new bills. We were told on that conference call last week that the lobbyists are talking. There is going to be a whole slate of employment law bills introduced this year. That's not unusual, but they are anticipating that some of them will deal directly with AI. I looked at the bills that were introduced last year on AI, and while there were some that would impact the workplace, the big focus was really on state agencies. That is going to change. Now, I keep mentioning AB 331 because that's where a lot of the buzz is. What they're kind of thinking is there were some concerns about this bill and its efforts to regulate the AI industry. They felt that it might go too far, might be too broad, and might actually stifle innovation. The author of the bill is still very committed to the whole idea of instituting some legislation that would regulate this field. And so what she might do is sort of abandon 331 and introduce a new bill and start fresh with some of this. Interestingly, you know, and one of the things that they're worried about all of these bills is they want to, they're concerned about whether or not too many different bills on too many different subjects might result in addressing these issues in silos rather than having a comprehensive approach to how to regulate the industry. I also thought this was interesting. Correct me if I got this wrong, Dorothy, but they talked about one of the big concerns about business and individuals throughout the country is, will AI cause me to lose my job? And so what they said was a lot of people who are in favor of AI meet with the legislators and they say, well, don't worry about that because maybe some people will lose their job, but a lot more people will get new jobs. The whole systems will create jobs. That apparently is a no-go with the legislators. They're not interested in hearing that because their comment is, well, the people who lose their jobs are not necessarily going to be the same people who get new jobs, so there's always going to be some displacement, and we at the legislative level are concerned about that. So one of the things I think Dorothy handed out was, did you end up?
I did not hand it out.
Okay.
It's in the room. I did not send it out because you had said that was for our clients, so I was just going to give that to our clients. But if you want to,
we can hand that out. So okay. I created a legislative summary this week. I do this periodically for my clients. There's a lot of material in it not related to AI, but just if you were interested in seeing where the legislature so far is going with regard to AI, I do summarize the bills that have been introduced as of Sunday night.
And Anthony, for those of you in the room, Anthony's going to put those on the table if you want to take one. And for those of you that are on the webinar, I can email those to you after the fact. So when she sent those, she had said those were for our clients. So that's why I didn't send it out. But she's telling me now I can, so I will send that to you afterwards, okay?
So the kinds of things they're looking at, they want to create an AI interagency working group, which will study the issue and have members not only from government, but also stakeholders from private industry, including the AI companies themselves, who can talk about recommend a definition of artificial intelligence, study the implications of the usage, determine proactive steps to prevent artificial intelligence misinformation campaigns. That was in the news just this week. Determine the relevant agencies to develop and oversee artificial intelligence, etc. There's also a bill pending, this is a carryover from last year, that would place limits on a company's ability to reuse someone's photograph or ID. There's concerns among actors, musicians, et cetera, that, again, that their images are going to be reproduced without their permission and they won't be compensated for that. There's a bill, SB 893, which would facilitate the California Artificial Intelligence Research Hub that would try to create an atmosphere where businesses in the AI field could thrive in the state of California. And those are the kinds of things that they're looking at this stage. We do know, again, that they apparently are going to look at some more bills that relate directly to AI and the workplace, but we haven't seen those introduced yet. Okay, so what are the various considerations that employers should look at when choosing an AI system? And actually, this issue will be revisited in session three, I believe. Yes. So this is just my initial take on this. And again, every employer is going to have to tweak it for their own purposes. And you're probably going to tweak it again after you hear what Adriana, Eric, and Dorothy have to say as the morning progresses.
I never have anything to say.
But determine how the AI system will be used, for example, recruitings, performance reviews, performing essential job functions, identifying applicable laws, and that might vary depending on what kind of uses you're putting the technology to, as well as what kind of data you're plugging into the system. Develop guardrails, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, addressing such issues as, do you have to provide notice or disclosure to your employees, to your clients? Do you need consent? Privacy, security issues, ethics, copyrights, non-discrimination, etc. I'd also mention comprehension and reliability and accuracy. Remember the obituary I talked about, as well as the lawyer's documentation. We do have some guidance on this, the EEOC guidance, the SEC guidance, and so forth, where you can start getting started. Vetting your vendor. I mean, start with if you are looking at various vendors, find out what they offer, not only from a product perspective, what kind of output and how it matches your needs, but also what kind of vetting have they done of their products, as I alluded to earlier with regard to have they tested it for bias and have they analyzed it for these purposes. And also, don't forget record retention. If issues come up, I was reminded of this as I was researching the bias issues. Let's say you ultimately have a bias claim brought against you, that someone is alleging that your selection process was biased on the basis of race or sex or whatever. You want a paper trail so that you can prove, no, it wasn't. It was, we did our due diligence. We believe that this is a system that operates in a non-discriminatory fashion. And this is the data. These are the numbers that we can produce, that 4/5 number that I talked about earlier, and so forth, to establish and make a case for the fact that we followed the rules and we did not act in a discriminatory fashion.
Well, that was fun sharing. Thanks for allowing me to do this on the podcast.
I'm happy to, and I'm happy and pleased to be part of this whole process.
Thank you very much. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. If anyone should want to reach out to you, how would they do that?
My email address is marilyn@monahanlawoffice.com.
Well, thank you very much again. I really appreciate you, as I always do. And thanks to all of our listeners. Please stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned for the next episode of Benefits Executive Roundtable. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for compliance tips, cost containment ideas, new trends, and decision-making tools. This podcast is produced by Advanced Benefit Consulting, Anaheim, California. All views expressed are those of the host or interviewees and not necessarily those of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Information contained herein should not be construed as legal advice. We always recommend that you consult with your legal counsel, as situations do vary. Ms. Koshu can be reached at 714-693-9754 extension 3, toll free at 866-658-3835, or visit our website at advancedbenefitconsulting.com.